God bless everybody tonight. It's a wonderful, beautiful Monday night, and we're just so blessed to be together. I'm very thankful for the privilege of being able to share these number of weeks. And tonight we're going to look at the second and third signs because they both have to do with the power of words. Now, just a quick review from last week about what a sign is. A sign shows or points something important that you're supposed to note. It makes something known. The purpose of the sign was to cause people to believe, and they show that Jesus truly was the Messiah and that he is the Son of God. And I was thinking about a couple other examples of what a sign would look like. And like if you were looking for a treasure on a map and the X marks the spot of where the treasure is, that's what you need to go find out where that X is. Another example would be I like to watch NCIS, and, you know, they're wearing plain clothes and they go up to somebody to ask them questions, and the guy goes, "Who are you?" And so they pull out their NCIS badge. "Oh, okay, I guess I do need to talk to you." The badge isn't anything of itself, but it symbolizes the authority that is behind the badge. And that is what a sign is in the Gospel of John. So this next sign is after the Passover and starts in John 4 and verse 45. And I'm going to read from the Aramaic translation tonight. So verse 45, "And when he came to Galilee, the Galileans received him because they had seen all the signs that he had done in Jerusalem during the feast, for they also had gone to the feast. And Jesus came again to Cana of Galilee, where he had made the water wine." Oh, remember about the water into wine. It was Jesus' authority over timing and over something that was to would take a long time naturally to happen. It goes on, in Capernaum, there was a servant of a certain king whose son was sick. Now, Capernaum is about 25 miles away, excuse me, from Cana. And the King James says that this man was a nobleman. People believe that people believe that he was Herod Antipas' servant, so that he served King Herod. Anyway, he heard that Jesus was in Cana. Verse 47 goes on. "This man heard that Jesus had come from Judea to Galilee, and he went to him and was begging him to come down and to heal his son, for he was close to dying." So his son was close to dying. He wasn't dead yet. But the man walked the 25 miles to go see Jesus. Verse 48, "Jesus said to him, 'If you do not see signs and wonders, you do not believe.' Well, that servant of the king said to him, 'My Lord, come down before the boy dies.'" The man really believed that if Jesus came to touch his son, that he would be healed. But verse 50, "Jesus said to him, 'Go, your son is alive.' And that man believed in the word that Jesus spoke to him, and he went away." That's amazing. Because all this time he's thinking that Jesus has to come. But as soon as he says the words, "Your son is alive," the man believed in that word. And so while he was going down, his servants met him and brought him good news and said to him, "Your son lives." And he asked him at what time he was healed. And they said to him, "Yesterday in the seventh hour, the fever left him." that would have been about 1 p.m. So it takes a long time to walk 25 miles. He might have stopped along the way because this is the next day. But verse 53 is, and his father knew that it was at that moment in which Jesus had said to him, your son lives, and he and his whole house believed. Furthermore, this was the second sign Jesus did after he came from Judea to Galilee. His father realized that at the exact moment that Jesus had said to him, your son is alive or your son lives, and that's when the son's fever left him. And not only he believed, but his whole house believed. So what this sign shows is, first of all, it's authority over distance. Now, in our culture, we have the telephone, we have the internet, we have emails, we have all different ways to communicate all around the world pretty easily. But at that time, there was no telephone. There was no easy way to send a letter. You had to hand carry a letter. So the fact that this servant specifically goes to find Jesus shows the effort also that he made to do that. There's no distance, though, that can matter, and that's one of the most important points of this story. And also the power of words. And so when we compare it to what we have as our authority, we not only have authority over disease and death, but we have authority over distance, over what words are spoken. And what's really interesting, I'm just going to get something for my throat here a second. You want to turn to Acts chapter 19. In the book of Acts, there are a number of things that also show that distance didn't, that it did not require people to be physically there in order for someone to get healed. One of them was where Peter's shadow. If Peter's shadow just came by, like a shadow doesn't have any power, right? But it was his authority over disease and over distance that was shown in that record too. Now, in Acts 19 and verse 11, this is talking about Paul. It says, and God was doing great miracles by the hand of Paul, so that even from the coats that were on his body, handkerchiefs or pieces of cloth were brought and placed on the sick, and the sicknesses went away from them, and demons also went out, by the way. Handkerchiefs and pieces of cloth were brought from the person. So it proved, again, that there is no barriers of distance or where it requires a personal presence of someone to, in order for someone else to be healed. Now, I told you also last time that there's discourses that follow the records of the signs, and there's no direct discourse following this one, but later Jesus explains why he commands and why he speaks like this. So I want you to turn to John chapter 12 in verse 49. It's Jesus speaking, because I do not speak from myself, but rather the Father who sent me gave me a command, what I should say and what I should speak. Verse 50, and I know that his command is eternal life. Therefore, these things that I speak, as my Father told me, so I speak. Again, the signs show that he is the Son of God, and his relationship to his Father becomes clearer and clearer the more that we look at this. As my father told me, so I speak. Well, that's what we can say too. Anytime we're in a healing situation or someone needs healing, as my father told me, so I speak. Now, the third sign is a man who had an infirmity for 38 years, and it takes place at a place called the Pool of Bethesda. And Jesus seeks out one person in a very large crowd to be healed. It reminded me of the lost sheep, how the shepherd leaves the 99 sheep and goes at search after the one who was lost. So we're back in John chapter 5 and starting in verse 1. And after these things was the feast of the Judeans, and Jesus went up to Jerusalem. This is probably Pentecost because he went to all the three major feasts. Verse 2, now there was in Jerusalem there a certain pool, which is called in Hebrew Bethesda, and it had five porches in it. This word Bethesda in the Aramaic text, it means house of mercy, but there's a lot of dispute about what the name of it was. In fact, it was not even discovered until the mid-1960s, that there even was such a place. And then once they found it, then a lot of things have come out since then that show that it was probably not a Jewish site, but was a Roman pool. And the word Bethesda can mean house of flowing. So it had these two pools, one that flowed into the other one, surrounded by five porches. So let's keep on reading. Verse 3, and many people were lying in these porches who were sick and blind and lame and crippled. And they were waiting for the movement of the water, for an angel came down at various times to the pool and moved the water. And whoever would go down first after the movement of the water was healed of every pain that he had. Now, even in King James, it says an angel of the Lord. The whole end of verse 3 all the way through verse 4 is omitted in the earliest manuscripts. The first places that it appears is probably around the 3rd century. And so this idea of an angel of God moving the water was not true. So what was this pool really used for? Well, further excavations revealed that it was a healing center to Asclepius is the name of the Roman god of healing. And it was actually outside the city walls, and it catered to the Roman guard that were stationed at the Antonio Fortress there. There have been, throughout the excavations, even in recent years, there have been various artifacts to this god that have been found in Bethesda. But they really did uncover this whole shape of the pools, two pools together with five porches around them. Now this god, Asclepius, is the same one that the AMA has a sign of a pole with a snake wrapped around it. And he was known to be the god of healing and medicine. And so even to this day, there are many, many different medical associations that use this symbol of the snake. And I was interested to find out, you know, why it was a snake. But that particular god, and that's what his mythology was that you use snake venom to heal people. So this was actually a idolatrous pool, and here was a man who came to this pool. So let's see what happens to him. Verse 5, now there was a certain man who had had an infirmity for 38 years. Wow, that's a long time. Jesus saw this man who was lying there and knew that he had been infirm a long time. Well, how did he know that? By revelation. Jesus specifically went to this place that was an idol worshiper healing center and found a man who had been sick for 38 years. And he said to him, do you want to be healed? That sick man answered and said, yes, my Lord, but I have no one to place me in the pool when the water is moved. But before I go down, another comes down before me. Now the water probably did move at various times. That's why it had this reputation of being a healing center. But the water came from the upper pool into the lower pool. And there also was an underground spring there. Jesus said to him, rise, pick up your bed, and walk. And immediately that man was healed, and he rose up, picked up his bed, and walked. And the same day was the Sabbath. Uh-oh, it was the Sabbath, no less. When Jesus went to this pool, he found the man who was sick, and he just tells him to rise, pick up your bed, and walk. Now, it was against the oral law for a person to carry your bed on the Sabbath. So, verse 10 goes on, and the Judeans said to him who was healed, it is the Sabbath. It is not lawful for you to carry your bed. But he answered and said to him, well, he who made me whole said to me, pick up your bed and walk. So it's a very similar thing that happened to this man as what happened with the nobleman, was he literally believed the words that Jesus said and was immediately healed because of that. Verse 12, and they asked him, who is this man who told you to pick up your bed and walk? And he who was healed did not know who he was, for Jesus had withdrawn from the large crowd that was in that place. So Jesus tells the man to rise up, rise, pick up your bed and walk, and then he disappears. So the man didn't even know who he was or why he had come there. But verse 14 says, after a time, Jesus found him in the temple and said to him, behold, you are whole. Do not sin again, lest something that is worse than before should happen to you. And that man went and told the Judeans that it was Jesus who had healed him. See, if you believe that this was a Jewish site, then there's another question about why did Jesus say go and sin no more? And people assume that it was because he must have sinned or that's what caused the sickness. But if you understand that this was an idolatrous place, then it's very clear that he's telling him, don't go looking for healing in all the wrong places. So what this record shows and points to is Jesus' authority over the consequences of sin and also over sickness over a long period of time, and that he also had authority of the Sabbath. In other places in the Gospels, it calls him that he's the Lord of the Sabbath. And it's because he explained to the Judeans, who many, many times were questioning him why he healed somebody on the Sabbath, or he was doing things on the Sabbath that they didn't agree with in their the oral tradition that surrounded the law. And he was saying, no, is it good to do good on the Sabbath, to save life or destroy it? That's from Mark. The other thing to note again is that he commanded the man to do something, and once the man obeyed, then he was healed. Now the discussion afterwards goes from verse 16 all the way to 47. So you can read that yourself but I just want to read verse 19 and 20. And it shows that this whole record, both of these records really show that he is the Son of God and does not do anything except what God tells him. So verse 19 says, "Now Jesus answered and said to him, 'Truly, truly, I say to you, the Son is not able to do anything by his own will, but what he sees the Father do, that he does.'" What he sees the Father do, that he does. That's why he's the Lord of the Sabbath, because even though it was the day that they were supposed to rest from work, and even says God rested from all his works, like in the beginning in Genesis, but it wasn't that the Father didn't do anything on the Sabbath, because people were being born, there were needs that happened, and he's saying that, the rest of that verse says, "For those things that the Father does, these also the Son does likewise." "For the Father loves his Son, and everything that he does, he shows him, and he will show him greater than these works, so that you will marvel." And that's what it says about us, too, later in John, that we're going to see greater works even than these. But the whole reason of having greater works, and Ephesians 2:10 talks about walking in the works that God ordained for us to walk into, we need to also do the same thing that Jesus says here. We use our authority to command sickness to leave and a person to be healed, and we seek that the lost, the one who has a need, every person, each person is important. I love that song, "The God Who Stays," that we played earlier, because it says that God runs in the direction. His arms are always wide open, and that's what we have to be able to communicate to others, too, is you can be healed. Go. Your son lives. Rise. Pick up your bed and walk. So God bless you. I'm going to put a chart on the website where the recording is that will have all of the eight signs and just a summary of what it's talking about with the authority and everything. So if you want to look for that, that would be great. Love you. Bless you.